As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. So when I'm not at the radio station, one of my other jobs is a video columnist for Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And one of the things I've been wanting to do and start is crossing those two worlds and inviting, instead of just editorializing the great reporting that reporters from Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Green Bay Gazette, across all the Gannett USA Today properties in Wisconsin are doing for local journalism, actually inviting reporters on to talk about their stories. And so the first time we're doing that is today. And so we are joined today by the Native American Affairs reporter for all of the USA Today network publications in Wisconsin, Frank Vesviles. Did I say that right?
Vesviles.
Vesviles. Nice to meet you. Nice to meet you over Zoom. Thank you for joining us today.
Nice to meet you too. Thanks for having me.
And so you've been covering this beat for 2 years?
Yes, since June of 2020.
And was anyone covering it before you?
No. This is a relatively new beat in Wisconsin. It hasn't really been done before. I came through a nonprofit organization called Report for America that aims to place journalists across the country in undercover beats. So this was definitely an undercover beat in Wisconsin. And some thought that I wouldn't be able to find enough stories or might not be interesting enough, but with 12 indigenous nations in Wisconsin, there's plenty of stories to go around, and I'm turning other reporters in our company. Other reporters are asking me if they can cover this or that, and I welcome the help. I think we should have more reporters covering Indian country in Wisconsin. It's too much for me one time, otherwise I would have to do maybe eight, 10 stories a week, but I'm glad that other reporters are stepping up and finding stories as well. So it's been great.
Yeah. And it was interesting because, correct me if I'm wrong, I mean, Wisconsin, as far as east of the Mississippi, still has one of the largest, if not the largest state with the largest indigenous population.
Yes. Correct.
Yes. Yeah. And so it would seem that, yes, there are a lot of stories to tell. And I don't even think we can get to all of the ones. We won't have time today to get to all the stories you've written just this summer. But I picked out a couple of them that I thought were interesting and definitely our audience would love to hear more about. And so one that I saw, I don't think it was the first time you reported on it today, but in your First Nations newsletter, talking about, and we had talked about this a couple weeks ago as far as the Menominee Nation, having a new, potentially trying to build a new casino in Kenosha. And sure. I didn't know a lot about it, but as reading this morning, and what you just, your newsletter that went out this morning, was that it's a little bit more complicated and controversial within the different tribes than it seems on face value.
Right. Well, this is a story that's been followed mostly by the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and my colleagues there, such as Drake Brentley and Carrie Spivak. They've been covering that for years. Menominee has been trying to open a casino there for decades now. But I started receiving statements from Oneida and Stockbridge Muncie how they support their efforts to expand gaming there. And I didn't really see anyone else reporting that part of it, how other tribes feel about it. And then I asked them, and then I figured that Potawatomi and Ho-Chunk would be most affected with the competition there, because Potawatomi has their casino in Milwaukee. So I just reached out to them and they said they are against it, but not for the competition reason, but because Menominee is working with an organization from Florida on the Hard Rock International, which is owned by the Seminole tribe there. It was purchased 2007, I think, by that tribe. Oneida has worked with that tribe too in national Indian gaming efforts across the country. But Potawatomi is opposed to a tribe from Florida, coming into Wisconsin and potentially profiting millions of dollars and bringing that back to Florida and not staying in Wisconsin. And then another reason why the Potawatomi are opposed to it is because that's ancestral tribal land for the Potawatomi, which extend their land had extended from Door County, the Door County area along the coast all the way to Milwaukee, Kenosha, Chicago, and then it extends eastward toward Detroit and, you know, probably about half of the state of what is now known as Michigan, and then into Ohio. So they had a vast territory, and they, you know, figure it's their right. If anyone should open a casino there, it should be them, because that's their ancestral land. But the Oneida and Menominee, the Oneida and Stockbridge Muncie, they support the Menominee's efforts because, you know, Menominee is one of the poorest tribes in Wisconsin, and a lot of the revenue that the tribes depend on for, you know, healthcare, education, you know, infrastructure such as roads, it comes from gaming. And then also, you know, those tribes have a relationship from the going back to the 1800s, early to mid 1800s is when basically when the Stockbridge, Muncie, and Oneida were forced out of New York when the Europeans came over and like just kind of took their land, and then they were moved. They were forced to relocate to Wisconsin, which was known as Indian country. They, you know, they settled on land that was Menominee. So they had a relationship with the Menominee since then. So they've always been, you know, really friendly with each other. So,
and how different, or how do the decisions like this ultimately get decided? Like, how much is this between the different nations and also between the governor or in the legislature? Like, who all needs to be involved as these kind of developments happen?
Well, it is a long process. You know, the whole chunk are wanting to open a casino in Beloit, and that took that's a 3-year process, and they had the support from the Potawatomi, and tribes didn't really have a problem with them opening there. But the Potawatomi officials are saying with them being opposed to this, it could take even longer, or they could stand to block it, because that's one of the stipulations, it seems, is that it can't have an adverse effect on other tribes in the area, or that other tribes can't oppose the opening of a new, you know, gaming area. It's a federal process. It could take years, and it has to be approved by the governor. It was vetoed. That proposal was vetoed by former Governor Scott Walker back in 2015 when the Menominee had proposed opening a casino there back then. It still seems like kind of a long shot, but we'll see.
One of the other articles that I saw that you wrote that were for two different art exhibits that are happening that are, I don't know if representing is the right word that I want to use, but I'm lacking the right word as far as two significant, one ongoing and one past, the problems, very big problems in Indigenous culture. And the first one was No More Stolen Sisters, which is the ongoing, I don't know if the word is epidemic, but as how many missing and murdered Indigenous women are in Wisconsin and nationwide. And then the other one being Away From Home, which I know this summer has gotten a lot of the story of how many children were ripped from their families and put into quote unquote white boarding schools. Mm-hmm. And so I have not gotten a chance to see either of these exhibits yet, but I'd love to hear more about both the stories and the exhibits themselves.
Right, sure. I think one of them has already ended. One of them is about to end. But yes, it's there are very deeply emotional issues in that affect Indian country. You know, like you said, the Indian boarding schools. You know, they've there are still boarding schools and schools, but you know, they're not the practices that they've had in the past, which was basically to forcefully assimilate Indigenous children, and they would do things like punish them for if they spoke their own Indigenous language, because they wanted them to speak only English, and then, you know, they cut off their, you know, their braids or the Indian braids, and you know, just, you know, trying to suppress their culture a lot. And there was a lot of abuse reported at these schools, you know, physical and sexual abuse, and it was very traumatizing. And this was at the Manitowoc Library. This is a traveling exhibit, and it's very powerful, especially when you see they have a display of handcuffs. There were child-sized handcuffs that they use on children, you know. So, you know, and they have, you know, stories, and there are, you know, some people who did benefit from these schools. You know, they learned a lot, got an education, even though they had to put up with some of the hardships. But there were, you know, some of them felt that they had a lot of you know, that they got a lot out of it. Hmm. And then the Horn Stolen Sisters exhibits at the Royal West Museum in Manitowoc also, just a few blocks away from the library. These are art pieces focusing on the epidemic, you're right in calling it that, of murdered and missing Indigenous women who are three times more likely to be murdered than white women. And it's an issue that people are still investigating and trying to find out the exact reasons and the causes why. So,
and I saw, because it's still open as far as Attorney General Josh Call had formed the Murdered and Missing Indigenous Women Task Force. I don't know if there's any, has there been any updates or findings, or because as he's obviously up for re-election, and so is there any line of sight to having some conclusion to that task force?
They're getting close to it. They've gotten some money for research, and they're still in the midst of the researching phase. But they're tasked with putting that report together by the end of the year, because as you said, that's when Attorney General Call's present term expires, and he'll get voted back in. So that's the aim, to have a report ready by the end of the year, and they're going to have their recommendations to law enforcement, and also and one of their tasks is to form a database of you know, who's exactly missing and murdered Indigenous, because there's no formal database here in Wisconsin to just kind of keep track of the numbers. They have the rough estimate numbers, but this is being a more accurate report they're looking for, so that law enforcement can work off of. And basically what they're calling for is more collaboration between law enforcement agencies with some, you know, federal, tribal police, and county police, more of that working together to try to solve these cases. So that's a major recommendation that they're likely going to have in that report.
Absolutely. And so we have to take a break quickly, but because you've also written about the relationship between Indigenous tribes and the police, which is probably part of the task force, and it's all interconnected. So we're going to take a break really quickly, but our guest right now is Frank Vasviles, who's the Native American Affairs reporter for the USA Today Network of Publications in Wisconsin. We'll take a break, and we'll be right back.